The Rising Coaches Podcast is brought to you by Connor Sports. Connor Sports, the market leader in sports, athletic, and gym flooring. Connor Sports, where champions play. Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, your host, and today we are joined by very special guest and good friend, Brian Bender, new head coach at Southwest Mississippi Community College. Brian just took over for the Bears in late spring, and we get into a great conversation on culture, how he's instilling it, where he's trying to go with it, and just how he's attacking his new program from a new office, the head coaching office. We also get into his take on recruiting and his career path. Really some great stuff. Brian has a great way of putting things into perspective and is a very creative hard worker. Not just a hard worker, but a creative hard worker. Hope you guys enjoy the conversation. And if you do, we ask that you please subscribe to the podcast. Brian Bender, head coach of Southwest Mississippi Community College. Have you gotten used to hearing that yet?
Getting there. Thanks for having me on today, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Excited to jump into this conversation, so let's get right into it. You got the head job there how long ago?
I got the job back in May. It was kind of like a month deal in between April and May where we had an idea it might be coming, but it wasn't until beginning of May that I actually became the official head coach here at Southwest Mississippi Community College.
So it's been several months. How's the transition been? And what's it like for the first time?
It's been good. It's been great, actually. It's been a lot of work trying to plan and prioritize my everyday duties, because every day is an adventure. As a head coach, you kind of don't realize how many fires you have to fight and how many new experiences you're going to have every single day. But I've been thinking about it for a long time. I've been in this profession for 14 years, and your goal should always be, if you want to be in the profession for a long time, is to be a head coach. And so I'm very fortunate and lucky at the age that I am at this quality school to have the opportunity to be a head coach and lead my own program.
So, you know, they always say you can do a ton of work to prepare, but until you're in that seat, you're never really ready. Would you say that's accurate?
I would say that's accurate. Now, we haven't played a game yet, but there's been a lot of things that I've gone through that kind of caught me by surprise. But at the same time, like the previous head coach here, Thomas Graves, now at Ole Miss, he used to always challenge me to try and think like a head coach. And he would say, we're running this program as co-head coaches. And that kind of helped me a lot in this past year, especially being an assistant here, to get moved up to, hey, focus on my job, be 2 feet in where I am. And just kind of did my job and laid low. And then when the opportunity presented itself, I think it was an easy transition for administration to say, hey, we got the guy that we want already here and kind of slide me right into that head spot.
Yeah, I love that, the co-head coaches thing and some of the stuff that Thomas Gray has done there. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But what have been some of the surprises that you really could never be ready for? Is it just, you know, the amount of decisions you have to make on a day-to-day basis? Is it the type of decisions? What have been some of the things that you couldn't have anticipated?
I would say just your time is the most valuable. And you always kind of like, as an assistant, yeah, you might come in, your head coach might have one or two things, but you have you prioritize what you want to do and you get it done. Whereas a head coach, you could have a list of endless things. And so it's learning how to prioritize your time and making sure that, hey, every day something might just come up and you might get nothing done on that list because a player may come in and need something, or there's an issue with the court, or there's an issue with something off the floor, or academic challenge, or all of a sudden there's a meeting with your AD or your president, or you have something like a booster just walks into your office. Well, you have to take the time to talk with them and visit with them, and your time is extremely valuable. Another challenge that I kind of ran into here is my recruiting class. So we only brought back two players that played in the game last year, and we had a kid that redshirted. So we had three players. We had to bring in 12. Well, at the time, when the transition was happening, it was kind of like rumors that Thomas was leaving, and so people were trying to poach our players. And so there was kind of a challenge with that of I basically had to re-recruit my whole team that we had already signed. So we had already signed 7 or 8 guys and basically did it all again. Went and did home visits, went and visited with them. A few of them, it was really easy. A few of them were even more excited. And a few of them were kind of like a little leery of the whole situation, and you just had to go re-recruit them. So establishing that trust and relationship with the previous guys was a challenge to keep them all on board. But luckily, we had that relationship. They understood that it wasn't necessarily about the head coach. It was about Southwest and the culture that we have here and why it's a good place for them.
Okay, you just said the word that I wanted to get into, culture. So two things. Number one, it sounds like there's been a great culture established there at Southwest Mississippi. So would like for you to elaborate on that a little bit. And then number two, now it's your program. What are you doing to implement your culture? And did you already know what you wanted to do? What your culture would look like? Or is that something that develops every day? And how are you instilling that into your program?
Yeah, I think culture is the key. And when you think about JUCO, it normally doesn't scream culture. JUCO is a 2-year place. A lot of people use it as a stepping stone to where they want to be. Whereas the 4-year level, where I've spent majority of my time at Division I, culture was everything with building a foundation. You had 4 or 3-year players, and you had people that had been there for a long time. Whereas JUCO, your roster is flipping every single year. And the fortunate thing here is the previous coaches that worked here before, whether it's Thomas Gray, who's now at Ole Miss, Andy Farrell, who's at Dayton, Mike DeBose, who's at McNeese State now, and Alex Ainsworth, who's now at Mississippi College. There's been a lot of really good coaches that have coached here, and they were all guys that have come from 4-year programs. And so our culture here at Southwest is different than most junior colleges. The culture is the key to every organization. And our kind of culture here that Thomas and Andy and those guys had established is if you can get it right off the floor first, you can get it right on the floor. And that's something that really resonated with me. It resonates with our players. And it starts off the floor first. And so that goes to everything that you're doing, whether that's what you're saying, what you're doing, the kids that you recruit to your program. We're looking for guys that are going to do the right thing, but at the same time can also play a little bit. And the culture at Southwest is that Southwest is never really the point. Anybody that wants to be here at Southwest for the rest of their life or at a junior college or a 2-year program, we don't want you here. We want you to use Southwest as a stepping stone to get you to where you want to be. And a lot of these kids hadn't come from certain areas of being pushed or had high standards set for them. And so when you set standards that are really high for a kid or for your coaches, it's amazing what can be accomplished. And so I've kind of taken what Thomas and those guys had done and what I learned last year and then kind of flipped it into my own little thing. And so our theme actually this year at a 2-year school, this works. At a 4-year, I don't think it would work quite as well. Now there's some values and stuff to it. But our theme this year is all about the shifts. And at JUCO, it's a different type of mindset. And kind of our like hashtag is everyone has to be on board. So it's all aboard, hashtag all aboard. And we would ask the kids, why did you come to Southwest? And so this is kind of how we geared our culture around. And they said, well, you guys do a really good job of getting guys scholarships. So we've had 26 sophomores in the last 4 or 5 years. Every single one of them graduated. Not one of them is paying for college, whether they got a D1 scholarship, a D2 scholarship, or an academic scholarship. And then kind of our theme this year was kind of going off the NBA where we were trying to build a super team with the kids that we were recruiting. And so our goal was to win a championship and get these guys a scholarship. So it was all about the shifts. And then there's different, like, I guess, pillars to what we're doing that kind of culminate that all together. So how do we get you a scholarship? How do we win a championship? And the first one for that was our relationships. And I'm a big believer that in the culture, anything you're doing as a leader, young man, or leader of anybody, it comes down to love and trust. So I'm a big guy. I'm loving my players, challenge them to work hard and to have trust, not just with me, but with everybody around you. And I'm a Gopher alum. I went to the University of Minnesota. So PJ Fleck, the football coach there, he's kind of a coach that's obsessed with culture. And I've kind of been fascinated with what he's done at Western Michigan, and he's obsessed with culture, like literally obsessed with it. And so we've kind of stolen some things that he's done, but hey, we have to be a family. That's what relationships are about, as a family. So forget about me, I love you culture. So it's based on selflessness and everything along those lines. So guys get to know that, hey, we all have each other's backs. And so that's the first pillar, is relationships and then ships. So it's all about the ship. And then it's about ownership. So in Mississippi, being here for a year, Mississippi kind of has a plague of some things with education levels and different things. And I love Mississippi kids. And the majority of our roster, I know you've been in Mississippi before when you were at Mississippi State, but Mississippi kids, they don't always come from the best scenarios. And so trying to create ownership in these guys' lives and have them be held to a higher standard and try and reach their goals and dreams and aspirations is really important. So we're trying to create like a sense of urgency, a sense of ownership and responsibility for their actions. So we kind of use this quote a lot, like boys do what they want, men do what they have to do. And so trying to create ownership within our kids on the floor as well as off the floor, and make them realize, hey, it's not my team. It's not Brian Bender's show. It's Southwest. It's our family. And they have some sense of ownership in the program, where every person matters, whether it's the best player on our team, our 15th man, our managers, our athletic trainers, our coaches, whoever it is, they all have some type of responsibility in our program to make sure that we're successful. So yeah, you have relationships, you have ownership, and our next one is leadership. So trying to create these guys to be leaders on and off the floor and in their communities and things like that. My previous boss at App State, Jim Fox, used to use this slogan. He said, you're always on stage. So everything that you're doing when you're a student athlete is people are jealous of what you have. People are envious of what you're doing and what you get to do and that you get to go to school for free and all that kind of stuff. So you got to make sure that you're doing the right things and you're representing the logo on your shirt the right way. And, my goal as a head coach is to try and provide opportunities for all these guys as a leader. So maybe in practice, like I'll say, hey, in 1 minute, I'll tell one guy, hey, in 1 minute, I want everybody on the line with the basketball, and I'll just let it go. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but you kind of learn who you can trust and try and instill leadership in your program and in your team. And one thing that I've noticed, especially at JUCO, is that you have all freshmen and sophomores. So we don't have a single guy that's over 21 on our team. And so we have 12 technically freshmen. And so that screams just immaturity. Now we have some talent, but we have a young group. And so trying to get these guys, another PJ Fleck thing with their young team in Minnesota this year, is he talks about racing to maturity. So we have a young group of young players. We're also young coaches. So all my coaching staff, I mean, I'm 31, one of my assistants is 28, the other one's 27, the other one's 23. But we're all young. We're all technically immature, but what we're doing every single day is we're trying to be professionals. So we're practicing like pros so we can have fun and play like kids when we're playing in the game. And that's something that PJ Fleck has said all year long with his group, and I think it's a really cool thing that he's doing, and we're doing that. So that's three of them. So there's two more for you, Gordo, but craftsmanship is the next one. And that's getting better every day. So keeping these guys hungry. The cool thing about JUCO is these kids don't want to be here. And so to push them is fairly easy. They're fairly self-motivated to get on to the next level, to play at the four-year level, hopefully at Division I level. And even though it's a process, they have to understand that we don't want a championship overnight, but every day does matter. And so focusing on the details and getting better every single day is our craftsmanship part. And the last part is the battleship. And so kind of our theme will be like this big ship, and we're on it. And if you're not on board and the ship takes off, you're probably not going to get back to that ship. So trying to keep everybody engaged all the time. And we're in a very, very competitive league in Mississippi. There's 15 JUCOs. They're all very well coached. Recruiting is very, very cutthroat. And talent wins, but you have to be able to compete every day. If you don't show up, you're going to lose in this league. So trying to instill toughness in our guys, trying to make them compete every day, play as hard as they can, but at the same time still make it fun, because it's basketball. It's supposed to be fun. You're supposed to love it. And so we just kind of share that passion with our kids, and they've really adopted to it. They're hashtagging it on their Instagram posts and their Twitter, and we do like a shit motivation quote every day. And it's kind of establishing our culture, and it's similar to what we've done here in the past, but it's got my own little niche to it, which I think is kind of cool, because when you take over a program or when you get a job, you can't try and be somebody else. You still have to be you. And just because it was done here in the past doesn't mean it's incorrect or it's definitely right, but you got to have your own. You still got to be yourself when you become the head coach. I think that's really important.
Well, yeah, and I would think that'd be tough when you're taking over a program where it wasn't like the previous coach got fired because they were unsuccessful. You're taking over a program right. That's been, you know, amongst the most successful in the state. So I'm sure that's hard. There's probably parts of you that say, hey, why fix it if it's not broken? But like you said, you got to make it your own as well.
You got to make it your own. But Thomas did a phenomenal job here and really set the bar high. And what he did in the last 4 years here is outstanding. And I hope to just dabble in what he's doing and hopefully do something the school's never done before, and that's go to Hutch.
What did Thomas Gray do best? What, if you had to give me one quality of his that he was really, really good at, what would that be?
He was a phenomenal, phenomenal public speaker. Like, he just had a way with getting guys motivated and relating to the kids in different ways every single day. And he always had juice. Like, he always had the energy every single day. Like, even though you knew he wasn't feeling the best, when it turned on and you were on the court in front of those players, like, he always had energy. And he would say, like, if you're juiceless, you're useless. So, like, if you're juiceful, you're useful. And he would bring it every single day. And then he wasn't just a good basketball coach and a good, like, motivator of young men, but he was a phenomenal person. And at the end of the day, like, we're in this for the kids. We're in this for, it's not about us. And that was something that he always brought every single day, is he understood that, hey, it's bigger than basketball. And these kids' futures are nothing to gamble with. And he just had a way of making people feel really important and learning the bigger picture of life. And so that was something that I took from him, and it's something that I hope I can pay dabble in just as well as what he did. So, but some of the stuff that he did, I mean, here he won. I mean, we won the first state championship in 53 years here in 2016. He had academic success. So the 4 years as a head coach, he either finished first or second in the nation every year in team GPA. And we were the number one GPA in the country two of the last 3 years.
This is what I love to see, Bender. This is how I know you're a head coach, because no matter what we're talking about, you find ways to slip in your program's statistics.
Hey, you have to. Recruiting never stops. If you stop recruiting every day. No, our program is in really good shape right now and has a lot of momentum. And we're one of those programs that, hey, we may not be that powerhouse of Indian Hills or South Plains or CSI or Northwest Florida or East Florida, but we're like a mid-major JUCO that's like scratching the surface. And we're getting guys to the next level. We've got 21 D1 players in the last 6 years, highest GPA in the country. And that's something that we want to continue here. And it helps with recruiting, but at the same time, like, it shows each year that you can be that guy. And so it pushes these guys to be that next guy. And we had five guys sign D1 last year. Well, this group right here, they're trying to beat that. And hopefully we can do that.
No, I love that. I love that. You've made the culture competitive to attain goals like that. And I like that quote that you mentioned from PJ Fleck, the race to maturity, because, you know, at the JUCO level, like you said, everyone's got freshmen and sophomores. And so, yeah, talent wins, but there's always a team that wins is at least in the region championship that is just more mature than the others, and just has a toughness and experience factor, you know, maybe mentally more so than physically. So let me ask you this. When you're trying to instill this culture, and you touched on it a little bit, is this weekly meetings where you laid out all five pillars and each week? You kind of touch on all of them. Did you lay them out one by one? How often are you hitting on all these things?
Yeah, so, I mean, every day we're doing something related to the program, but a lot of it's situational. And so, like, an example, this summer, we had 12 guys in. This is the first year we did summer school in Mississippi. So we had 12 guys in. And it was new for everybody, not just me as a head coach, but it was me and my other assistant, and was establishing a staff and doing different things. Well, we had rules about, hey, where you sit in the classroom, that you go to every single class, that you go to study hall, that you do all your what you're supposed to do. You sit in the first two rows and don't wear your hood in class and things like that. Well, we had two guys that missed class, and we kept talking about ownership. Well, they came to me and told me that they missed class. I don't know how many programs, let alone JUCO programs in the country, will have guys turning themselves in. They did their little punishment, and we moved on like men. And so you learning that type of thing. We had a kid that was late for practice one day in the summer. Well, I just reset the clock, and I told my freshman point guard and said, hey, man, I'm resetting the clock 15 minutes. You're supposed to be here 15 minutes early. Go get that kid. He ran as fast as he could out of that gym, went and got the kid. He's creating leadership. They're showing trust. He did his little punishment later, but he had ownership in what we were doing. Now, luckily, as a first-time head coach, if I were to go back crazy on these kids, they'd be like, wait, who is this guy? Like, who are you? So learning how to be a head coach and not going crazy at the beginning, I think, is important to create that relationship and that trust with these guys that, hey, I got your back, but this stuff can't happen. And so learning how to be more mature, how to create ownership, how to create leadership. And we'll do different quotes and we'll do different things. But a craftsmanship thing is, hey, you got to get better every single day. So we have a little penny jar. We kind of took this from Jim Fox, who was at Davidson and stuff. And each day they put a penny in this jar. And the jar just keeps getting heavier and heavier. And hopefully by the time the season's done, we have a full jar and we'll bring it on the bus with us to Hutch. But every single day it's a process. So using all of these life lessons and using our pillars and to get them to where they want to be and seeing the big picture of, hey, we're trying to win a championship. But yet it's not just about our team, because at JUCO, you have to be a little selfish. You have to understand that these guys are here for the team, but they're also here to get what they want. And so if you just neglected that part of your program at JUCO, I don't think it really works, because you can't lie to your players. And so knowing that we have their back and we're always trying to get them promoted and always trying to get them exposure and always treat our program like a Division I, because if you want to play Division I, you want to be in a Division I culture. So we lift like one, we practice like one, we go to study hall like one, we try and dress like one. Everything we do to try and prepare them for the next level.
So speaking of Division I, you spent the vast majority of your career at that level. Started off at Minnesota. You mentioned you're an alum. Working for Tubby Smith for how many years?
So I was with Tubby for 6. I was with Dan Munson my freshman year. He's now the head coach at Long Beach State. And then my sophomore year, I was a manager. And Jim Molinari was the interim head coach. He's now the top assistant in Nebraska. So worked for 3 established head coaches. I mean, Tubby Smith's a Hall of Famer. What Dan Munson did at Gonzaga kind of got that thing started. And, Minnesota was where it all started, and I was there for a total of 8 years, 6 with Tubby.
What did you learn from those guys, specifically Tubby, because that was the majority of your time there, but, you know, any of those three, what did you learn?
Tubby is a phenomenal person, and he had like a way with people to make you always feel special. And he had a way of like motivating you almost like a parent where you didn't want to disappoint him. And he was really good at that. He was a mass disciplinarian. He was very good to his staff when it came to, hey, understanding, hey, you have a family, you have different things going on, but he always had a way of kind of making it like a family atmosphere like that. And Tubby has been a very good mentor to me throughout the years, and he's helped me, and we stayed in contact, and I sent him a couple of players when I was at West Plains, and then we had a kid here that played for him at Memphis who's going to be a senior this year, Mike Parks. And just Tubby is just a great human being. And at the end of the day, like, that's what this business is about. It's about relationships. It's about doing the right things. He's never done anything unethical, and he's one doing things the right way. And especially with the status of our business right now, I think that's really important.
Yeah, no question. No question. And so after your stint at Minnesota, you went to West Plains for a year and then went to Appalachian State. How was the year at West Plains? Another JUCO. This is in Missouri.
So for being a Rising Coaches podcast, I guess I would give a little information. So like when I became a manager at Minnesota, like I begged to get on. I begged as a freshman. I knew I wanted to coach. I didn't know, like, my goal was to be a college coach, but I didn't know how realistic that was for a guy that played a tiny school in Wisconsin. Wasn't good enough to play college basketball. And I just wanted to be a part of a team. And I wanted to get away from my family a little bit and went to a
– Hold on. You can shoot, though. Big, you can really shoot it.
I can shoot it. That's one thing. I'll challenge any of the kids I recruit or any players on our team to a shooting contest any day. But the when I was at Minnesota, I just wanted to be a part of that family. I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. And so my freshman year was a manager. My sophomore year, I learned how to do video. And at the time, that's like the film exchange aspect of video stuff is kind of gone now because of Synergy and the technology that we have. And, dude, I used to send letters to every school in the country and say, hey, on December 22nd, will you please send your game to us? And I'd send a DVD or VHS tape in the mail. And that's kind of how even I've kind of met you is through Andy Farrell. And Andy was at Clemson when I was at Minnesota. And we got to know each other through letters and different guys in the business. A lot of my best friends now are like yourself. Like you guys are Division I assistants. And I'm a JUCO head coach. And Andy's at Dayton. And we've kind of gone different avenues, but it kind of started in the video room or as a GA or as a manager. And so I did that. And then I was a GA. And when I was at Minnesota, so I was there for 8 years, I probably interviewed at 10 plus jobs, whether it was Division I assistant jobs, Division I ops jobs, Division II assistant jobs. I mean, even like high school head jobs. I tried everything. And I would joke about it, but I'd say like I finished second place a bunch. And it came down to, hey, you need to coach and you need to recruit. Those are the two biggest things for coaching is that, especially at the college level, is you need coaching experience and you need recruiting experience. So as prepared as I could have been learning as a manager and doing film and doing scouting reports and dabbling with unofficial visits and mail outs and things like that, it's still not coaching. And so I guess one of my best friends in the business, I joke and call him my dad in the business, is Joe Esposito. He's now at UNLV. He was at Memphis, Texas Tech, Minnesota. He's a head coach at Division II in Texas. And he kept telling me, Bender, you got to coach. You got to coach, man. And he's like, you can do this stuff forever, but you want to be an administrator or you want to be a coach? And that kind of sat with me for a while. And I could have probably gone to Texas Tech, but Esposito's like, hey, you need to go coach. And we had a player at Minnesota named Paul Carter, and he played at West Plains and kind of had some relationship with the head coach there, and they needed a volunteer coach. And so I left my full-time job. Well, technically we were let go of Minnesota, so I guess I left it, but didn't really have a choice, but I wanted to stay in the business. So I took a part-time job. I ran the study hall program. I was a dorm director for $1,000 a month, lived in a dorm with a bunch of students, ate cafeteria food every single day, taught 6 hours at the school and learned how to coach. And luckily for me, we had a good team. We ended up having 12 kids, 91 off that team. But I got to experience it. I got to coach. I got to learn how to recruit, and we also got recruited. And so at West Plains, I learned a lot from Yancey Walker and our assistant, Chad Van Riesen, who's now at Iowa Western. And it was the best experience for me as a young coach to be at JUCO because of the things I just said. You get to make mistakes. You get to learn how to coach. You get to recruit. You get to do everything you can imagine. You're marketing, you're fundraising, you're teaching, you're involved in the community, you're running study hall, you're figuring out how to manage money because you don't have any. You got to do scouts, everything. And so it's like the best and fastest way to learn as a young coach is to be in JUCO. And even though it might not be Division One or might not be that level that you want to necessarily be at, but you're coaching high-level players, you're recruiting, and you're recruiting often. So, like, even last year, we signed 12 players, and I think at West Plains we signed 8 while I was there. So, signed 20 players in 2 years of assistant coaching. What Division One coach can say that? Not a lot, if any, or else you're in trouble. You got APR issues. So, getting to recruit and get recruited. Every year, your program's going to change a little bit because you have new players. And so, you're going to try new things and you can make mistakes, and no one's really going to notice at that level, you know?
What was your mindset going? Were you excited about taking the job at West Plains, or did you kind of take it because you had to?
I was excited to coach. I was excited to coach, but nervous. Because some people will say, like, hell, you're going to get stuck at that level. You're gonna be a JUCO guy forever. Okay. Well, I don't think that the grass is always greener where you water it. And it's not always where on the other side. It's where you water it. So if you're working, people are going to notice. If you're doing the right things, people are going to notice. If you're winning, people are going to notice. If your players are leaving your school and doing the right things and being successful at the next level, people are going to notice. And this business is about relationships. And so most of my contacts were still at the Division I level, so I wasn't as worried about that. But I needed to, in essence, take a step down or backwards to get me to where I want to be. And, I mean, my goal sometime down the line is to be a Division I head coach. Is that going to happen? I don't know. But every day I'm going to work towards it, and every day I'm going to be 2 feet in where I am, not always looking for that next job, because if you take care of business where you are, it's going to happen for you.
So I have to echo your sentiments about JUCO, because I did it. That was my first job. I was a manager at the University of Tampa, Division II school, and went to the Final Four with our assistant at the time, Mark Olson, looking for a job. And in my head, I was going to go be a GA at Duke or Florida, or if things didn't work out, I was going to go to, like, University of Miami and be a GA there. And that's how I thought. I had no clue how the business worked. And Mark Olson introduced me to Tim Ryan, who was the head coach at Central Florida Community College. We were walking by each other in the street at the Final Four. And Ole said, hey, do you need an assistant? He said, yes, I do. This is Adam Gordon. He'd be great. So Tim said, hey, when we get back, let's talk. We'll get you on campus, let you check it out, and go from there. And I'm telling you, the whole drive back with Olson, I was telling him, I don't want to mess with this thing. I don't want to go JUCO. It's not for me. I'm going to get a Division I job. And he said, Gordo, don't be an idiot. Drive down there. It's 2 hours away. Drive down there, check it out, see for yourself, and then make a decision. And fortunately, I had somebody like that kicking me in that direction, because it was the best 2 years of my coaching career. Most fun I've had, most I've ever learned, got to coach, like you said, do all those things, coach, recruit, be recruited, and such a great way for any young guys getting into the business or trying to get in. It's such a good way to get in, is coaching at the junior college level. And my deal was the same. I made $7,500 for the entire year, lived in the dorm, ate cafeteria food every day. I mean, but the experiences you get out of that and the amount that you learn, you know. Then I went to the Division I level after that and was a GA and knew so much more than any other, like, I imagine, than most GAs that were just coming through from being a manager at that level and had never gotten their hands dirty. So great, right? Experience that I really recommend.
And I love JUCO. And I mean, if you think about, like, last year, so it was me and another assistant, but my primary focus was defense and doing scouting reports. Well, so I did 20 scouts last year, 26 scouts. So you've been at SEMO for how long?
Going into year four.
Year four. Okay. Have you done 26 scouts in your last 3 years?
Maybe all the years combined, maybe. Probably
there you go.
Less.
So, like, in 1 year, I did three times or four times as many scouts as someone else would in a normal year. Were they as good in detail as they probably needed to be? I don't know. But you learn faster. The curve of learning is so much faster at a lower level, even though basketball is basketball. And so learning how to coach and recruit, that's the fastest way to do it. And it's also a very rewarding level because you get to see your guys go on and be successful. I have 2 kids playing Division II and 5 kids playing Division I for next year, plus the kids that were here previously that we get to follow. And so, like, I'm following 10 Division I programs next year of guys that I have some type of affiliation with or that I've coached in the past. And that's a really cool thing to see those kids go on and be successful. And you can make a difference in their life, not just short term, but long term, and help them get to where they want to be. So,
you mentioned, being a little afraid of getting stuck at the junior college level when you went to West Plains, and you were only there a year before you got another Division I job at App State, correct?
Yeah. So I had, when I was a junior or senior, maybe it was between the two, at Minnesota, I was a manager for the USA junior national team. It was a U18 team, and Bob McKillop was the head coach, worked with John Thompson III and Anthony Grant, and that's where I met a lot of different coaches, and Tubby was involved with USA basketball, so he helped me get in. And so I worked with Bob McKillop, and I had kind of followed Davidson a lot, and at the time it was before Synergy. And so when they made their little run in that NCAA tournament, I got to know Jim Fox a little bit because they were playing Wisconsin. We talked about scouting reports and sent some film out on different programs that we were playing because we filmed every game on our DirecTV boxes and had like a DVD database of almost every college game and got to know him. And then at Minnesota.
Hold on, Bender. Can I stop you there? Can we dive into to what you just said? Because you touched on it earlier. You got to know Andy Farrell through film exchange, and you just said you had a database of game film. Is that right?
Yeah.
So this is like some
of database.
This is just to describe people like the type of person you are and the type of worker. You know, when you're at these high major levels, you've got video equipment, you know, out the wazoo. I've never said that phrase before, but I didn't want to say the other word. And so a guy like me, I'm just going in and recording the games that we need for our team that season. But you and Andy Farrell was the same way, recorded, my guess, every single game that was on TV, subscribed to all the random channels, Root Network, so you could get the Mountain West games, and just so you had that collection of information, because this was before Synergy, and so if somebody needed that, they knew there's a couple guys in the country that are fanatical about collecting information and collecting game film. So, hey, if I need to watch Denver University play Northern Colorado, I don't have access to that, but Brian Bender might. Is that pretty accurate?
That's fairly accurate. Like, my goal as a young coach was to be needed. You had to have something that someone else didn't have, and so you had to find what your niche is, whether that's recruiting or that's video. You have to be really good at something, just like a player. When you're recruiting a player, if a kid's just an exceptional shooter, like, you almost have to have him. And so my thing was, I'm going to be as resourceful as I possibly can and be the hardest working person. Because those are two things that you can kind of control. And so being the most diverse worker you could possibly be. You want me to do a workout? I'll go do a workout. You want me to run a camp? I'll go work a camp. You want me to go and do laundry? I don't care. You want me to wash the floor. I'll go do that. If you want me to be there at 6 in the morning with a player and work them out, I will. At 11 o'clock at night, it didn't matter. I just wanted to be as accessible and resourceful as possible. So we fortunately had 10 DirecTV boxes affiliated with DVD database, like a DVD player for each one. I'd set a timer every single day for all the DVD games. Sometimes I do, on a weekend, I do 20 games and pick the best games and go into ESPN and pick what channel they were on, and I'd set them, and I'd finalize every DVD, and I kept a like an Excel file of all of the games. And so if I wanted a game on Creighton, I'd just Control-F search Creighton on the Excel file, and I had 6 games, and these were the numbers, and I'd go into my database. I could make a copy and send it out to somebody. Now it's really easy because you can get any game you want on Synergy. But at the time, like, there's people charging $50 to $100 a game to have access to those games. So when you made the NCAA tournament or you made the NIT or – any postseason play, like, you needed games, and no one really had them. And so that was my way of being resourceful. Now, deep down, I was probably thinking, hey, we're going to make the NCAA tournament, and I'm going to need all these games. But some years it happened, some years it didn't. But you had the database.
Well, that's,
it was a good way of looking.
And that's what I think separates you, not to just blow smoke in your direction, but, you know, I think a lot of people are really hard workers and willing to do whatever, work camp, do a workout, pick a guy up from the airport, whatever. But you're, like you said, your resourcefulness to think a step ahead and how can I separate myself and go that extra mile with collecting all that game film is kind of a separator, which is impressive. Yeah. And I did not know people were charging for that. If I did know that, I would have absolutely made a lot more money at Clemson because we had all the games.
Yeah. No, I never made money off the deal, but I mean, it did establish a relationship with Jim Fox. And then a few years later, Jim Fox was at Villa 7, which was on Minnesota's campus. And I filmed different coaches and ADs speaking and hung out one night. I chose to work the event and just got to know him, got to know a few other coaches. And when he got the job, tried to get on as assistant. I'm ready to be an assistant. And I don't know if I really was, but he ended up hiring me in the operations role and literally packed up my U-Haul and I was driving to North Carolina. Didn't even see it. Just literally hopped in my U-Haul, packed all everything I owned and went there. Didn't have a place to live or anything. I just wanted to get there and work and be a part of another Division I staff, a new young head coach who was up and coming, a guy who has won Davidson for years and years and ran a unique system offensively that's different than anyone else in the country. And I was really, really excited about that. And it was a great opportunity for me. And Coach Fox had trusted me to bring me there. And I mean, we knew each other, but it wasn't like we were super, super close, but he knew I was resourceful. He knew that I could do all the video stuff in the ops role. He knew I could manage the managers. He knew I could do equipment. He knew I could do budget. He knew I had some JUCO ties, so I could help, even though you're not supposed to recruit and coach in the Dobo role. I had enough resources and capabilities of, hey, helping with recruiting, having good creative ideas, being able to watch film with players, things like that you can do in that Dobo role. So,
now you were there how long?
I was there for 3 seasons. And so we took over a program that had APR issues. They went up from the Southern Conference to the Sun Belt. So you went from RPI league, like it was like 28 or 29 to like 14. So you had a team that finished basically last in the SoCon and went up 14 leagues and you could only practice 5 days a week. And it was a rebuilding process. And so we kind of flipped our roster. We got better kids in there. We got kids that cared more about academics and now they're finally where they kind of need to be. They finished fifth in the league last year. I think they'll have a legit chance to, hey, finish in that top three this year. But after 3 years of being there and being in that operations role, I had been in the business for 12 years. And at no point has anyone above me ever gotten a job. So no assistant went on and got another assistant job. No assistant went and got a head coaching job. No one had ever left above me. And so it got time to, hey, at some point I need to control my own destiny a little bit. I can wait around for years, but I want to coach. And so it was sitting in that office and doing that work. And it was very beneficial for me. I learned how to be really detail oriented. He pushed me really, really hard to be super, super detailed and everything matters. And you could not work him. He was there at 5 a.m. He was a single coach and 5 a.m. he was there every night. But it was one of those things where it was time for me to coach again. And it was a really hard decision because I loved working there. I loved being a part of the Division I lifestyle. And it was just time. And Andy Farrell just left for Dayton. And I've known Thomas for a long time. So Thomas worked our camps when I was at Minnesota. And so another way to get into this business is working camps around the country. And Thomas just happened to work University of Minnesota's camp. He did a good job at camp, but I didn't really know him. And then Thomas actually lost his camp check at the Mall of America, biggest mall in the world, loses his camp check. And so he was forced to like communicate with me for the next week or so about, hey, trying to get this camp check. And anyone turned it in, like all this other stuff. And so we got to know each other a lot better. And then over the time, like for the next 7-8 years, like we just stayed in contact. He kind of dabbled with recruiting one of my kids when we were at West Plains. But I mean, Thomas was a guy that I've known for a long time. We had a personal relationship as well as a professional relationship. And so when you're hiring a coach, you want to look for one of those two things. People are hiring someone because you're an unbelievable coach and recruiter, so you got players, or they're hiring you because they know you and trust you and know you're going to be loyal and you're not going to undermine them and you're not going to hurt their, do something wrong to detriment your program. And so when you're doing those types of things, like I knew it was Mississippi and I was scared to death about moving to Mississippi, but it was a chance for me to coach again. And Thomas was like, hey, this is year four for me. I've had some opportunities in the past, but the timing wasn't right. But I wouldn't be surprised if something happened in the next year or two where you could be the next head coach here. And so when you kind of had that, not mindset, but you knew that there was potential for movement, and he had a good team coming in, and I got to recruit again and get some new life, get some new energy and be a part of something different. It was an opportunity that I took and came here for a year, and we had a good year last year. We were 17-9 and made the semifinal of the region tournament and made the state tournament, which is very good for here in Mississippi. And Thomas ended up getting Ole Miss, and I became the head coach.
So when you're sitting in those support staff roles at the Division I level, there's things you can do to get yourself ready to coach. I mean, you can improve your knowledge of the game and your basketball IQ, and you're in practice every day watching people coach and taking bits and pieces. But there's really nothing you can do to get yourself ready to recruit. I mean, maybe you can listen in to some phone calls if one of your assistant coaches lets you. But, you know, I know people talk about having to find their coaching voice when they finally get into that role. Talk about how you found your recruiting voice, because that's something, you know, I know you finding your voice is not a challenge, but how did you get yourself ready to recruit? And what are some of the things you do now with that? How has that developed?
Yeah, so just to touch on what you just said, I think it's really important. So when you're in that administrative role, you have to find ways to help your coaching staff and not just do your job. You have to do your job first. That's first and foremost. You have to do the best job at the job that you have. But then if you finish all your duties and your tasks and everything that's asked of you, then you try and help the program in other ways of being like a coach. You can learn through osmosis. You can learn through watching other people and doing things and watching videos and watching press conferences and trying to learn as much as you can. You just got to keep up with the times. When it comes to recruiting, the key to recruiting, when we were at Minnesota, we had two top 25 recruiting classes. Our recruiting coordinator was Ron Jersey. He's now the top assistant at Radford. And Coach Jersey was a coach at Georgia, and Marshall was a head coach. And he told me, he goes, Bender, the key to recruiting is knowing who's out there. And that seems like a really simple thing to say. But yeah, outside the top 150 to 250 players in the country, how do you find out about kids? What can you do? What can you call around? Are you asking questions? You have to know who's out there, and you never know what's going to happen next with those types of kids. And so you follow them and develop and you try and create relationships. And so anywhere that I've been, I've tried to, you always want to kind of recruit inside out. So locally, you can always meet those coaches, whether it's a team camp or whether that's, hey, you guys, or people coming to campus, or even those crazy emails that you get every day where you're getting 10 of them from random people. Like, there's some value to some of that. And I try and respond to all of those emails. I'm trying to create a relationship and have as many people know who I am and know that, hey, that guy took the time to talk to me. And he may not have a player now, maybe 5 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, because I hope to be in this business for a long time. But trying to make people understand that, hey, I'm here for you and I'm here to help. Now, your kid might not be good enough, but sometime down the line, it may happen. And so recruiting is obviously like the lifeblood of your program. I think the key to any recruiting is your relationship with that kid or whoever's helping make that decision. And so you have to be extremely relatable. And recruiting is something that you have to do every day. And Joe Esposito used to say, it's like shaving. If you don't do it every day, people will notice. And you have to know your head coach too. So Tubby Smith could coach a kid differently than Yancey Walker, and Yancey Walker could coach a kid different than Jim Fox, and Jim Fox could coach a kid different than Thomas Gray. And so for the six head coaches that I've worked for, now I've only recruited technically for two of them, you have to know your head coach. What can they handle? What are they looking for? Not just as a player, but as a kid. And so we used to grade kids at West Plains by maintenance level. So we decided, hey, we could take one kid with high maintenance level, three medium maintenance kids, and the rest have to be low maintenance kids. So that means, like, kids, you got to run around, check classes, make sure they're doing the right things off the floor. Maybe they got some character issues and things like that. You don't want to have a team of high maintenance players because you will kill yourself as a head coach. You will run yourself thin worrying about other things that are going on. And so you have to figure out what's important, not only as a head coach, but as an assistant, of what you're recruiting and what you're looking for. And so that's kind of where kind of started with that. And when I was at West Plains, Chad Van Reesen was the top assistant. He was a really, really good recruiter. He's at Iowa Western now and has, I mean, three to six Division I players every single year. He had the same thing at West Plains. And he was at Division II. He was at Northwest Missouri, where they won a national title last year. But Chad used to say there's three questions that you ask when you're recruiting. You ask the kid, hey, who's recruiting you right now? You kind of get an idea of, hey, what are you competing with? Maybe what level that kid might be at. Who's helping you make your decision? So, like, is it your mom? Is it your dad? Is it your AAU coach? Is it the handler? Is it the high school coach? And then what I've done is they tell me, hey, it's my mom and my high school coach. Okay, well, that's the only people I'm going to talk to. Because the more people you talk to, the more issues you have. You have more people trying to get their hands on a kid or other things. Like, you go to what the kid says, and then you ask them, hey, what are you looking for in a school? And then that's where you attack it. So if a kid says academics, or they're talking about, I want to be a pro, or player development, or I'm looking for a family atmosphere, a location, I want to win, I want to play. I mean, whatever it is that that kid says, that's how you recruit the kid. And so you establish that relationship. You find out the answers to those questions, and you go to bat. And we had a very good recruiting class this past year, and then had to recruit them again when I became the head coach. But all of these kids, like, we never lie to our players. You never want to lie in recruiting, because then they're going to get here and they're going to be like, well, this isn't what I signed up for. And that's why we have so many kids transferring. You don't want to be a yes man. You don't want to tell a kid what he wants to hear. You want to tell them the truth. People want to be told the truth at the end of the day. And so taking whatever that is in what they say, and you be a listener. If you're a great listener, you can be a really good recruiter.
No, that's great stuff. I appreciate it. Bender, thanks for your time. You're really some great info, and wish you the best of luck. We'll be rooting for you this season. First year as a head coach.
Appreciate it.